Welcome to Pap Talk, a podcast from Contemporary OBGYN, where we deliver expert insight, commentary, and more on emerging topics and trends for doctors in women's health.
Hello, this is Angie DeRosa, Senior Editor of Contemporary OBGYN. Thank you for joining us today. In this next interview, we speak with an OBGYN who is at Columbia University and was in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic, especially earlier this year when that area was the hot spot. Dr. Aleha Aziz is an OBGYN and assistant professor of obstetrics and gynecology at Columbia University Irving Medical Center in New York. She talks to us about the experience, especially with other fellows, and having to do things like imagine performing a C-section with an oncology fellow. As the fellows pointed out in their written COVID-19 dispatches that appear online at Columbia University, you couldn't have imagined that months ago. It may have been thought of as absurd, but it became a near daily occurrence as everybody banded together to get the patient's needs met. The medical center also formed an obstetrics intensive care unit, and leadership of the hospital really made an impression on Dr. Aziz. Thank you for tuning in. Listen to what she has to say about her experiences and follow us online at contemporaryobgyn.net. Thank you. We wanted to find out, what was it like at its peak for you in your experiences, and when would you say that was reached?
In my experience, the peak, really things started accelerating in the middle of March and continued into April. And for me, at the time, I was a maternal fetal medicine fellow. So I was still a trainee. And, you know, there was a lot of uncertainty during that time. There was uncertainty about how symptoms presented, you know, how the disease evolved, and how specifically pregnant women and neonates were affected by an infection. And obviously some of that is still really not well understood. But at that time, we had very limited information from China's experience about how the virus affects pregnant women specifically, and how it's transmitted, and the extent to which it can affect neonates. So with that, there were still countless questions that remained about how the virus exerts its effect. And then there was also a lot of concern on behalf of healthcare workers in New York City generally about you know, issues of personal protective equipment and whether there was an adequate amount to keep the virus contained and protect our patients as well as ourselves. So those were definite concerns during the peak. And also, I think you could see this on people's faces and just with the anxiety that this brought, the uncertainty, that there was a guilt about healthcare providers and staff bringing this home to their families. And just that being an additional source of concern. And so you had folks that, you know, separated themselves from their families, lived in their basements for a while, you know, so that they would have the least effect possible on their loved ones. You know, the environment in New York City was really altered. People were used to this bustling, like, city full of commotion, and it just became a place that was so eerily quiet, and the streets were empty, and all you could hear were, like, the constant sirens that were wailing. And that was really a persistent sound that we heard during this time. So it was just a very different place, both in and out of the hospital during the peak.
What would you say were the major lessons that you learned, and I guess continue to learn, really, because it's such an evolving situation?
So there were definitely some lessons that I learned, not only as a maternal fetal medicine fellow, as a physician taking care of my patients, but also about the virus and its effect on the general population. One of the major lessons was that, you know, as a maternal fetal medicine physician, as an obstetrician generally, you know, the show must go on. We're providing care that is essential, that, you know, is basically guiding pregnant women through their pregnancy and through the delivery, and that can't change. And we really need to figure out a way that this could continue in the most safe and effective manner. So that was a major lesson that, you know, while these external stresses are present, it's about channeling the changes and the uncertainty and figuring out how we could still continue to provide the most highest standard of care possible. And it was also really clear that this situation was evolving, you know, from the middle of March to the end of April. Our policies were, as a department and as a hospital, were continually changing. We had to adapt to those changes, and they would be changing on a daily basis. And so that was obviously something that we had to keep in mind, and that based on research that was coming in or experiences from our center or other centers, we had to adapt our policies on a, you know, hourly basis. And what I learned was just how crucially important effective leadership is in this kind of a situation. And that, you know, there needs to be one like unifying voice that is able to bring everybody together. And I really did see that as something that was so important in this kind of a pandemic situation. Our chair was the image of impeccable leadership. She really, she had a daily conference call during this time that really brought the entire department together. There were hundreds of people on the call. And this was not only just providers and physicians taking care of patients, specifically pregnant patients, but also other subspecialists within the department, also nursing administrators who were all on this call. And not only was it an avenue for disseminating, you know, high yield policies, but it was also a way that people could, you know, address their concerns or fears or whatever might be going on at that time that they experienced, you know, on a patient-facing basis or just in other realms of their professional life. So it really brought a sense of calm and unity and like a unified sense of purpose for people to have that. And so I think leadership during a time like this is crucial. And then another major point that emerged during this time that I felt like was important to mention is that with this changing face of the virus, it was important for us to continue trying to learn as much as we could and not be paralyzed by any sense of unknown. And, you know, our department ended up adopting some practice changing policies like, you know, universal testing of pregnant women. We were the first to do that on labor and delivery, and that really gave us a better sense of the extent of the effect of the virus in terms of how it's transmitted among symptomatic but especially asymptomatic pregnant patients, and that gave us a better idea of how things were happening on a community level. So, you know, the fact that that remained an important driving factor during this time was something to keep in mind, to keep on wanting to learn and to keep on wanting to improve things. And, you know, social determinants of health were obviously are an important factor in every healthcare issue, and this was no different. I'm sure, you know, the media and you know, specific city-specific experiences have shown us that this is no different, and that our minority populations, unfortunately, are more disproportionately affected in terms of transmission of the virus and also death rates. So, you know, we have to keep that in mind when taking care of our patients. And our institution actually just recently published a study in JAMA about transmission of COVID-19 and how neighborhood and building factors actually affect certain patients more than others in terms of transmission of the virus. So those who live in crowded households, those who are living in lower socioeconomic status situations, and those who are also in buildings that have like higher numbers of people, that that the virus is transmitted more easily. So just taking those factors into account are, you know, those lessons we see, they repeat themselves in different types of acute situations.
That's definitely been a theme with all of the experts that I've interviewed and our discussions with our editor-in-chief, Dr. Kathy Spong. She's in Dallas. And then across the board with even our editorial board members. And then earlier, a few months ago, one of the first interviews I did with the talk about the impact of COVID in the OBGYN practice was with Dr. Laura Riley. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the factors that she talked about too, how really telling this was with those social determinants of health.
Yeah, and I think like while now we can say in New York City that the peak is behind us, you know, that the initial insult of this virus is not at the place it was, you know, back in March or April, now we're kind of left figuring out how to deal with the consequences of it and to kind of figure out how certain populations have been disproportionately affected and how that is permanently altered and how that will play a role into outcomes down the line for them, you know, during pregnancy and for their infants as well.
Are you involved in any research right now?
Currently, so I'm in between my fellowship and starting as an attending, but I am involved in a couple of projects that I'm trying to continue with, looking at viral load in COVID patients and effects on manifestation of disease. So that's currently what I'm working on.
So have you seen any the transmission with the transmission from mother to infant? Was there anything notable?
In our population, we haven't actually, we didn't see any transmission. So I can't speak to that with our population specifically.
And the other thing that was interesting, did you see, and I'm sure that you did, but the placental changes?
Mm-hmm.
Can you share any perspective on that? I guess it's difficult because that was the first of its kind research study conducted in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. I probably wouldn't be the best person to speak on that, but I know that our department is actually also doing some placental research in collaboration with, I believe it's Pittsburgh, but I don't want to speak incorrectly, but that there is definitely some evaluation of placentas going on at Columbia.
It's so interesting to me to think about the longer term effects, like you talked about, that you all have to think about with the populations that, you know, outcomes, the different experiences of those, the minority populations who are so impacted, and those long-term effects. And I read some of the dispatches, you know, during COVID, which I, by the way, I don't know whoever thought to put that together, but that was really a lovely thing to be able to read and to get your different perspectives on it. So the OBICU, was that newly formed?
Yes.
COVID?
Mm-hmm. So actually, it's interesting that you do mention the dispatches, because that was actually something that was used, you know, in our call as well. Like, it was a reflection that was read out at the end of each call, and it was just something that brought the department closer together, which I think psychologically and emotionally was very important. But in terms of the OBICU, it stands for Obstetrical Intensive Care Unit, and it's was specifically formed in the context of the pandemic, during a time when infections in the hospital were soaring, there was a space was at a premium. So a lot of the acute care floors and a lot of the operating rooms in the main hospitals were actually converted into intensive care units. And so ordinarily, in a situation where obstetrical patients, you know, who had, you know, various medical or surgical issues that required critical care level type of care, would be transferred to a separate critical care unit, that became less of a possibility to be done easily in a time when there was so much excess demand on critical care services. So we actually ended up developing this novel obstetrical ICU with ventilatory capacity on our labor and delivery unit. So it was really proximal to where women were being taken care of, you know, antepartum or postpartum or during delivery. And so women who ended up having complications or medical issues related to coronavirus, as well as our, you know, usual acute issues related to obstetrics and medicine on our pregnant patients or postpartum patients, they ended up being cared for in our obstetrical ICU. And it was actually managed by a attending maternal fetal medicine critical care attending, as well as an anesthesiologist, and they were both specialized to take care of these types of patients. And so it was managed by that that team, and then also there was input from other parties, such as you know, neonatologists, physical therapists, pharmacy, nursing, respiratory therapists, perfusionists. They were all kind of part of the conversation as needed, depending on the patient that was admitted to that unit. But it ran on its own. And the trainees, actually, who were residents and maternal fetal medicine fellows, were the ones that were running the unit. And this was done under the supervision of these specialized attendings. And so, you know, it really enhanced my experience as a maternal fetal medicine fellow to get much more direct critical care exposure, but also it also continued to provide patient care that was equivalent and of high standard that they would have received had patients been sent to an external medical or surgical ICU.
There was another, you know, a rather what I thought was a compelling statement in those dispatches, and I wanted to get you to specifically speak to it. And it was this: a welcome realization during this unwelcome pandemic is that we have chosen the right career. Helping women to bring life safely into this topsy-turvy world has never been more rewarding. Tell us more about that and about the rewarding aspects of what you've been through and continue to experience.
So this dispatch was actually written by one of my colleagues in collaboration with the maternal fetal medicine fellows. So it is a sentence that I recognize. Okay. Jessica Spiegelman actually authored this dispatch. And it is true. I think we all felt that it was very rewarding and a reminder of that fact during this time specifically, because while, you know, our policies were changing and our protocols were different, that same role that we play on a daily basis of guiding a woman through her pregnancy safely through delivery, that remained unchanged. And it's an incredible privilege to be able to be involved in a woman's life at that time, at an event that is so intense and so significant and hopefully happy for her. And so keeping that at the forefront of our minds during a time when there's this new factor of COVID-19, there's more complexities, more unknowns. Yes. You know, every positive outcome that we have during this time, we've managed to savor it a little bit more and to really appreciate it more because the context has changed a little bit. And so it just was a reminder of how lucky we are and how joyful that this can still be. And also, I think during this time when we're learning and uncovering new information, we're in a constant state of learning. And that's also something that is a privilege and that is an exciting thing to be a part of. And And, you know, the fact that we keep the objective of improving and impacting our patients' lives in the forefront of our minds, we can't think anything but the fact that this is so rewarding. So I think it was just a reminder, if anything, of the fact that we are truly lucky. And I think, you know, speaking to my colleagues and also myself, my reflections, I think that during this time when so many people were isolated socially with very minimal human contact, you know, I live on my own. And so, you know, being able to go into work on an everyday basis and have my routine very minimally changed, you know, to have the opportunity to connect with my colleagues at work was really, really a blessing. And, you know, we were able to just continue with that part of our life and do something that gives us gratification. And our colleagues, because of this change in our social situations, really became like our extended family, and we derived support from them, which was truly special.
Yeah, it sounds like there's probably a bond among those of you who went through this together.
Definitely. And also like a discovery of because people were all mobilized together, we actually, you know, got to know folks in our department that we may not have ordinarily.
From the different care specialties, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I was reading about that too, and sort of it was this all hands on deck to really for that patient care.
Yeah.
That goes into to the next question, you know, again, from the dispatches, that taking care of our critically ill patients and holding their hands as we turn up their oxygen, you know, reassuring their scared families over phone and video are the best contributions that we can make. And we feel so privileged to stand with our colleagues as we, the New York tough, remind ourselves what day it is, put our heads down and our masks up, and get to work, right? What did you hold on to for inspiration?
So I think really our department was a real source of inspiration. Everyone really rallied together to make sure that our care for our patients didn't change and that our standard of excellence was met. And I think we came together in a way that would have been unimaginable prior to the pandemic. Just the sense of collaboration and togetherness that was felt was very different than I think what it was before. I think instead of being paralyzed by the stress or, you know, the fear of what is to come, stress of the unknown, we really rose to the occasion and came together to continue providing high quality care. And many people, you know, staff, healthcare providers went out of their comfort zone to provide this care, and sometimes were redeployed to areas that they were not familiar with, and still managed to rise to the occasion and work in that same high standard. So it was really incredible to see that. It was also really inspiring to see many of our physicians in the department advocating for women in New York City who are pregnant in the time of COVID. What was also really exciting was to see how we were mobilizing the knowledge that we were gathering during this time and disseminating it out to other institutions and healthcare facilities, you know, in the form of webinars or in the form of manuscripts or small personal correspondence to let people know our experience so that when their peak comes about, yes, and when COVID-19 hits them hard, that they have our experience to work from, and to be as prepared as they can be. Obviously, the context may be a little bit different state by state, mm-hmm. city by city, but it gives people more of a starting point and a sense of what could be. And that was really inspirational. And I think the fact that this was all being done during a period where we were all very acutely aware that these were unprecedented times, and while we were doing all this, we also had to continue not only taking care of our patients, but also taking care of each other and ourselves. Yes. So all that within this context.
What do you think in terms of what it did for telehealth?
So I think that it really enhanced the availability of telehealth and what it could do for patients, especially those who ordinarily may have barriers to getting to their appointments and accessing care. In some ways, telehealth really opened up those channels for patients. And what initially probably we thought could not be done in terms of access and expansion of telehealth, it was really was adopted very successfully, and the number of visits increased exponentially from what was prior to during the pandemic. So telehealth really changed a lot within our institution.
Is there anything else that you would like to add to this interview? Anything else you would like to say about the experience overall or medically?
I think what is really important to remember is that advocating for pregnant women in this kind of a situation where there is a lack of knowledge of how COVID affects pregnancy and neonatal health, it's just important to keep in mind that this is something we have to continue pushing, because physiology in pregnancy is different, and the impacts can be, you know, lifelong. And so I feel very committed to that.
Thanks for listening to this episode of PAP Talk. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.